You are Locked On Twins, your daily Minnesota Twins podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Minnesota Twins podcast. Today is Friday, November 27th. I'm your gracious host, Nash Walker. This episode is brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network. Follow the show at Locked On Twins. Follow me at NashWalker9. And follow Aram Layton. Aram is here with us. Aram is the host of Locked On Marlins, the host of Locked On MLB Prospects. He's had some really cool guests. Aram, how are you doing? I know you told me how your Thanksgiving was, but tell us again about that football game today.
I'm not feeling it yet, but I'm a little bit nervous. We'll see how I feel in the morning, but it was a lot of fun to just be out and about. But yeah, like we were talking about, the next morning after that one day a year, you get really active. Does not feel good.
My legs are sore. We played yesterday morning, I told you, and the kids beat the dads another year. We got dad's kids here. But you know, the dads get a year older and they get away from their primes, and we're kind of entering our primes and other guys entering their primes, some prospects, and you've had some prospects on your show. Who are some of the guys you've had on? I know you've had big leaguers. You've had, you know, Jesus Luzardo. I don't want to step on your toes here as you tell us, but who's been on your new podcast for Locked On?
Yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun. I like to try to mix it up as much as I can with some lower level prospects, guys that were just drafted, and then some guys that just made their debuts. So you mentioned Luzardo, I just had on. I even had Mike Fiers on a week ago, cool, just to talk about, you know, his whole career and his whole climb through, because he has a crazy story. Earlier in the back in the summer, right after the draft, I had Bryce Jarvis, first round pick of the Diamondbacks. I've had just a bunch of different guys. I try to get somebody from all 30 teams. Griffin Conine, who's now with the Marlins. He was with the Blue Jays at the time of the interview. I'll probably have him back on again soon. And I just want to get as many prospects from all 30 teams. I have a couple Cubs lined up in the near future. We'll see who else. I might get a Blue Jay on. I'm going to try to get a Twin on at some point. But, you know, I think it's a lot of fun to just to be able to go across all 30 teams and, you know, just be able to talk to players from all over. And definitely keep an eye out, because there'll be a lot more guests coming up after this holiday weekend.
Yeah, super cool. And especially now with the Marlins having such a great year and having a special farm system, we saw Sixto Sanchez come up and pitch really well for them. What was it like for you to watch them, Aram, go through the playoffs and get to the Braves, a powerhouse this year? How fun was that to see the Marlins beat the Cubs and then move on, make the playoffs? Just a Cinderella year for them.
Yeah, I mean, it was really special, because I know this wasn't the normal season, and would the Marlins have made it in a 162? Probably not. But, you know, this was still as real of a season as we could have made it, given the circumstances. And I think overall, right, the best teams really belonged at the end there. The cream always rises to the top. So There was still enough validity to the season, in my opinion, to feel proud of what the Marlins did. I think, you know, when you look at everything they've been able to do, this is a team that's getting better, without a doubt. You know, are they a playoff team? No. They're going to have to do some work this coming year. But I think they're definitely not a 100-loss team anymore, which you can definitely see. And I think just going back to my timeline here, because I'm 23 years old, so it means I was born in 1997. The Marlins won the World Series in 97. I quite obviously do not remember that. And then they won it in 2003, which I hardly remember. And then from that point on, I always say my memory, like crystal clear Marlins memory, started 2005. They did not make the playoffs again since then. And after 2009, they didn't even have a single season over 500. So I was going a decade straight of losing seasons. That was the team I was rooting for. That was the team I was watching. So it was really special to have that this year and to win that one series. I was just happy to have a playoff game. I couldn't remember the last time the Marlins played meaningful baseball. So it was really cool to really be able to watch that and see this team continue to grow. And I'm excited to see how some of those prospects and young players continue to come together.
Yeah, and it's never been a lack of talent there. Like, you've been able to watch Hanley Ramirez and Christian Yelich, of course, and Marcelo Zuna and Giancarlo Stanton, and now you got new guys coming through. I mentioned Sixto, and it's a special group, and I think it's an organization now with the new hiring. Great hiring. What'd you think of that?
Oh, absolutely spectacular. And, you know, you talk about the historical context of it. That's great. But just from a baseball standpoint, We're talking about probably the most qualified general manager, first year general manager of all time. And she had to be to get this job, to break that glass ceiling. And she is beyond qualified for the job. So I'm excited. She's been a part of a winning culture with the Yankees, with the Dodgers. She was in the MLB front office for 5 years. She has done it all, you know, and I think she's really good for this organization that's trying to keep the momentum going. As I've said, you know, you captured lightning in a bottle in a unique season. You were able to make the playoffs. You were able to drum up some attention and excitement for Marlins baseball in South Florida that has not really existed in quite some time, probably since 2012 when they had the new stadium and went and spent all that money and it didn't work out. You know, this is the first time they've really had that excitement. There's a lot of pressure this coming year to keep that excitement going. I don't mean they have to make the playoffs, but they have to at least be competitive and continue to win those fans over, because they got to prove that it wasn't a complete fluke and that this right. team is trending in the right direction.
And to do it in the NL East, because we were looking at this division, and the Phillies are always trying, you know, they signed Zach Wheeler a year after getting Bryce Harper. They're trying to make moves to be competitive. The Mets now have new ownership. The Braves are great. It's a good division, you know, and to do it in the NL East is really impressive, and it was a great year for them. A couple of years ago, Aram, 2019 trade deadline, Marlins Twins had a trade, and it was Sergio Romo, who was, I believe, the Marlins closer at the time, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Sergio for Lewin Diaz. Is it Lewin? I can't remember.
Yeah, Lewin. Lewin Diaz.
Power hitting prospect, right? Moves over to Miami. What was your initial reaction to that trade? Because I think for the Twins, we needed bullpen so badly in first place, and that was clearly the biggest weakness on the team. I think we were all in favor of getting a veteran like Sergio Romo. What'd you think at the time?
Yeah, well, Romo was a fan favorite. No doubt about it. You know, even in the clubhouse, when we get a chance to talk to some players, he was always the most personable. I loved being able to talk to him whenever he closed out a game. It was great because you knew you were going to get a fun little soundbite from him. He was always just a great guy, and he's a winner, right? How many huge games did he close out for the Giants when they were that just juggernaut dynasty? So that was a guy you needed to add. What's interesting about that trade is the Twins had an opportunity there where I thought it was great for both sides. It was one of those classic trades that just worked for both sides. The Twins have a ton of depth at first base, right? Like the plan is probably Kirilloff is going to play there, and you don't really need Lewin Diaz. There's already a decent amount of left-handed hitters that the Twins have in the minor leagues and in the major league level. And I think a big component of this deal, and the Marlins don't get Diaz without giving up Chris Valamont. And that was a guy that I have written down in my notes right here that I was going to talk about later and on in the podcast, because he goes over from the Marlins to the Twins. And people thought that was kind of a throw-in. I don't have any evidence or firsthand like knowledge to be able to corroborate this, but I very much believe that the Marlins don't get Diaz without giving up Valamont. And the Twins identified a potential help me now with the reliever, with the closer, and then also being able to buy a little bit lower on a emerging starting pitching prospect in Chris Valamont. And all they do is give up from a position where they have a lot of depth with first base with Lewin Diaz. I think Diaz is a great hitter. He's a pure hitter. I think he has the potential to be a 25-30 home run guy. He plays great defense at first, but the Twins could afford to do that. They needed it to try to make that run. And I think Chris Valamont is going to be a very valuable piece for them as he continues to climb through the minor leagues. I'll get into his numbers when we start going into more prospects, but I'm very high on Valamont as well.
I'm glad you mentioned him, Aram. It's so hard because we didn't get that minor league season. You forget about guys who were emerging, you know, not the top prospects, but you mentioned having some lower level guys on your podcast as well. Guys who can turn out to be productive and sometimes superstar major league players. And prospect rankings are not always a perfect science, and you know that. And fan bases will get really excited about prospects and expect them to be perennial all-stars. You just have to understand that that's 100th percentile outcome for a lot of these guys. And then you have what's so great about baseball, and I'm sure you respect and appreciate this about it too. You have guys like Luis Arraez for the Twins, who's the everyday second baseman now, is a key to the future for them. It was like the 15th best prospect in the system. There's no way he was the 15th best prospect in the system. And he comes up and just doesn't stop hitting. And you find guys like that, and it's so exciting from a fan's perspective. Then you look at the top guys, and you know the Twins' number one prospect is their number one draft pick in 2017. The new regime comes in, their first pick, basically almost their first move, is drafting Royce Lewis. And you know, toolsy shortstop, five-tool player potentially, but is a volatile prospect. And you and I have jabbed you a little bit because I know, I think Jazz Chisholm, you were comparing to Royce, two shortstops. But what is your assessment of Lewis? And I know some people think he's a future center fielder. We had a question in the mailbag today about where he's going to play on the field. What's your assessment, Aram, and what do you think about him?
Well, I like the segue that you bring into Lewis about just the prospect rankings in general, because something I like to harp on the prospects podcast is I understand the importance of tools, right? Like tools are what you can project, and it's what gets you the ability to be able to dream on some of these players' potential. But at the end of the day, baseball comes down to one thing, right? And it's making contact and hitting the ball with authority. Mm-hmm. And you could be the best athlete of all time, but if you can't hit the baseball, it doesn't matter. And so often I feel like we see these prospect rankings, a lot of certain prospects are kind of buoyed by this just athleticism that you can dream on. And it almost overshadows the fact that they're not hitting the baseball. I think Royce Lewis is one of those guys, but Lewis is such a good athlete that you can't just ignore it despite his struggles. Like, he is an 80 grade athlete. The problem with Lewis and what I see with him is there is just so much going on with that swing and the way he hits right now. And I know he had a good stint in the Arizona Fall League, and it looked like he quieted his hands down a little bit, but I look at his swing and I just don't see how a guy can hit like that at the major league level. I hope he proves me wrong, but I just don't really see how he can make consistent, effective contact at the way he hits. And with Lewis, look, he is really good defensively. I think there's some question shortstop or center field, but I think no matter what, he will settle into either spot. He's a great runner, but even that, right? He's a great runner, but he's getting thrown out 30% of the time, 33% of the time trying to swipe bags. So that's not translating. The raw power isn't translating. He's only hit 14 home runs. What I will say, what holds out some hope for me with Royce Lewis, aside from the athleticism, is this. He has so much movement and length to his swing at times, yet his strikeout numbers have always hovered in the low 20% range, which is not bad at all for a guy that has as much going on with his swing, which to me tells me, you know, he has really good bat to ball skills, but he's almost blindfolding himself to a degree because of all of the hindrances he has in his swing. If he makes adjustments, the sky's the limit, but mm-hmm. I just keep seeing this guy going out there with the same crazy movements and stiffness to his swing. And it's like the definition of insanity. You're not going to be able to continue to do this. If it's not working at high A, it's not going to work at double A, and he's going to keep putting up these 640 OPSs. It's just not going to work. If he has that clicking moment, he could be a superstar, but he's got to make some adjustments.
The difference between Lewis and the Twins, widely regarded as the second best prospect in the system, is Alex Kirilloff, and we fully expect him to be a major part of the team this next coming year. But it's funny you mentioned there's just volatility with Royce. You know, he has his upside is high because he is an incredible athlete. And you mentioned those adjustments, the sky's the limit. It feels like, and why some people, Keith Law has Alex Kirilloff for, you know, recently had him as the ninth best prospect in baseball, because his hit tool is projectable. And the difference between Lewis and Kirilloff, the perception, and this is the perception, you know, there's always, you never know what's actually going to happen when these guys get up there. But is that Kirilloff's a safer bet, but that he doesn't have that athletic ceiling. You know, he projects as a corner outfielder or a first baseman, you mentioned, but the hit tool is there. What is your perception of Kirilloff? You know, he comes up in the playoffs. We're all really excited about him. Do you think that that excitement is warranted?
Absolutely. And that's what I like about the Twins system, is that they offset a lot of that volatility with Royce Lewis with some very, very high floor bats. And I'd say Kirilloff is one of them. I love everything I've seen from him swing wise. His power took a dip this past year or 2019 now, the last time we got to see him in the minor leagues. But I'm not too worried about that, because his numbers in 2018, as I'm sure all Twins fans know, were patently absurd. He had the most insane minor league season I've seen in a while. I mean, he led all of minor league baseball in doubles with 45, I believe it was, or 44. And the only guy that was even close to him was Bo Bichette. So that just shows how good his hit tool is. The reason why his power was sapped a little bit in 19, he had some ongoing wrist issues. And I think one of the first things you're going to see with a guy coming back from wrist issues is going to be that limit in power to a degree. As you mentioned, his hit tool is pretty darn close to elite. I think he has no problem being able to hit for average at the major league level. I mean, he hit 348 in 2018 and almost had a 400 on base percentage. He's a free swinger. And that's the thing is he is a free swinger. He's never going to walk a lot, mm-hmm. which I would be concerned about if he didn't have such a good hit tool. So the fact that he doesn't walk much doesn't concern me because he doesn't strike out much. He's never struck out more than 18% of the time, which is well, well above average in today's game. His hit tool plays up. I think no matter where he is, he can hit the ball to all fields. He's going to run into baseballs. I think he also benefits quite well from hitting major league baseballs because we know how much more those carry. And that's why you see the jumps and home runs in AAA and into the major leagues. I think he will benefit from that a lot more because he's usually a gap to gap guy. I'm very high on Kirilloff. I think he can be a guy you pencil in for 285, 290, and 20-something home runs and put up peak Nick Markakis-type numbers without a problem.
Yeah, we're excited about the bats. And I think Trevor Larnach, too, who's really similar to Kirilloff in a lot of ways, corner outfielder, left-handed bat from Oregon State, excited about him, too. You mentioned the floor of this system, especially on the offensive side. And then on the pitching side, this has always been a problem for the Minnesota Twins, developing pitching. You know, with the new regime in 2017, it feels like they've gotten more out of a lot of guys already, but they have two clear top prospects in the system on the pitching side in Yoan Duran and Jordan Balazovic, two guys who also Twins fans are excited about and kind of similar to Kirilloff and Lewis. You know, Duran's got the big fastball. He's got that splinker. And then Balazovic's just kind of got a good three pitch mix and at his best has a really good slider that runs away from righties, but seems like he has a higher floor than Duran. What's your view of the Twins system, Aram, on that pitching side?
Yeah, absolutely. And the one thing I want to say about Larnach before I dive into the pitchers is I am very high on him. I don't think he's too far behind Kirilloff in terms of his projection.
Absolutely.
I think the questions on both of those guys is the defense, right? But I don't mind it because Larnach, I mentioned Kirilloff struggling with the, you know, getting on base in comparison to just being able to walk and stuff like that. Larnach walks quite a bit. And that's something that I think goes well with his power profile. Larnach also strikes out more than Kirilloff, but he offsets that with the walk rate. So both of them offset their weaknesses very well, which I think is something that usually translates well to a high floor guy. He has ridiculous raw power, was putting up 110 plus exit velos in college and now goes on to the big league or professional baseball, excuse me. And the power was a little bit behind in high A because the Florida State League is a graveyard. But as he got them moved up to double A, the power started to come back in. The strikeout rate jumped a little bit. Don't care because the walk rate jumped and the power was way more on display there. He is a 30 home run plus guy with solid on base. And I think without a doubt going to be a legit dude in the major league level too. As for the pitchers, there's very interesting debate, I think, between which guy you could say is the best pitching prospect in the Twin system, because I think you hit the nail on the head. They are also quite different in regards to their projection and floor and ceiling, with Duran being a guy that could be anything from a top of the rotation arm to a bullpen arm, mm-hmm. given, you know, just some of the questions that come with him. As I can't even, I always mess up saying,
I know, I had to watch our communications director, Dustin Morse. He posted a video way back in January. Balazovic, you'll get it. I'm still
Balazovic. Yeah, I'm always picturing like people saying, oh, this is the prospect guy. You can't pronounce this guy's name. But no, that's, it's so many names.
Learning. We've known him for years. We're still learning.
Yeah, Balazovic. Okay, yes. So Balazovic, I know more about him as a pitcher than I do his own name. But he is a late bloomer, which was always going to be the plan with him, right? When he was drafted in the fifth round, he was an above slot guy with not too much pitching experience out of Canada. They had to sign him away from Auburn. And they knew he was going to be a project. It took him a while to really get to full season ball. But once he did, things really clicked. I would say the most amazing thing about him is he grew 2 inches after getting drafted and added 40 pounds. So all of a sudden, he's starting to run the fastball up a lot more. And something that's very common with these big pitchers is the fact that they are slow developing at times. Same with Duran and Balazovic, because they both are 6'5". And when you're tall like that, you have a lot of length to you. It's hard to repeat your mechanics. And that's why you'll see those taller pitchers, it almost never fails, that early in their professional career, they will struggle with their command. And then some guys it clicks, Some guys, they get moved to the bullpen like Andrew Miller. I think with both of these guys, it clicked to a degree. I would say with Jordan, it did even more. And that's why you saw him just dominate at the high A level. 73 innings, a 2.84 ERA, punches out 96. And for him, he's got multiple pitches that I think already play up to the major league level. The fastball is a 65 grade fastball because it's got heavy movement to it. He's got a solid slider, and he's worked hard on a changeup that now is starting to play up as well. I think he you could slot him in as a middle of the rotation arm by middle of the end of next year, without a doubt in my mind. I think he projects really well. Duran is very, very interesting because I think things started to click for him too later on as he starts to tap into the velocity a little bit more after he cleaned up his mechanics and repeated his mechanics a lot better. His fastball, as you know, can run up to the upper 90s. He's got that power curveball and then also that splinker thing you talk about. He gets ridiculous ground ball numbers, and that's something that translates really well to the major league level. We're seeing a lot of these power arms. You mentioned Sixto Sanchez. He does a good job of this too, is throwing that power two-seamer sinker type of pitch that gets you a lot of ground balls because they bail you out. They're a pitcher's best friend, and they keep your pitch count down. And his pitch count was getting a lot better. He was getting better at going deeper into games. Ground ball rate at 52% went all the way up to 63% by the time he got moved up. And that's something that, look, I don't think that's sustainable at the major league level, but even if he's hovering around the high 40s to low 50s with the ground ball rate, that's going to help him stay in a rotation a lot more because you can't count on just blowing it by guys all the time at the major league level.
Yeah. We're excited about them both too. And you mentioned that upside. I think there is some upside too, just because Jordy's gotten so much bigger. You feel like maybe he can even add a couple more ticks to that fastball, but looking forward to seeing those two guys. I want to run through these mailbag questions with you, Aram. Two guys you know pretty well from the NL East, Aaron Nola, Hector Neris. I think I said Neris, right? Neris, 1 year, $5.6 million left with the Phillies. Aaron Nola's got 2 years, $27.5 million left and a $16 million club option for 2023. This is a trade that was proposed in my mentions here. Brent Rooker, Yoan Duran, we mentioned, and Ben Rortvedt, who's just kind of a defensive first catcher in the system from Wisconsin. Rooker comes up last year and played really well, and he's kind of just overshadowed because he's in a system with Larnach and Kirilloff and a lot of other outfield prospects and on a team with Max Kepler and Eddie Rosario for the time being and Byron Buxton. But what's your view of this trade, Aram? At first glance from me, I would say that's probably not enough. Just because of how good Nola's been, 3.23 ERA since 2017, but that's only 3 years of control for 18 back the other way. How do you view trades like this, and what do you think about this one specifically?
Well, I think the Twins are in a good spot here where they can try to make some deals happen because they have so much depth in the outfield, like you mentioned. I think Rooker is pretty limited, and I think in certain ways with just his inability to hit left-handed pitching. That's going to be something that might turn some teams off because you're getting a guy that's somewhat of a platoon candidate. I mean, in 2019, he hit just 203 against left-handed pitching versus 312 against right-handed pitching, 12 of his 14 home runs coming against right-handers. So Rooker has value. As you mentioned, he looked good in that debut before breaking his hand, I believe is what happened, right? So he's limited defensively. He's limited a little bit platoon-wise, and that's going to be kind of the in the eyes of the beholder. Some teams might value him higher than others. You mentioned, though, that's a guy that's expendable for the Twins and could be a good start to a package, but it's definitely going to take more than that. I think you're not going to be able to get an Aaron Nola without giving up a top 100 prospect realistically. And I don't see the Twins really ever getting rid of any of those guys in the top five of their system. I don't know if that's going to be enough. And maybe you look at the major league club, you know better than I do in terms of who might be expendable at the major league level. But I don't think that that would get the deal done, unfortunately. And I would not want to trade it away from any of my top five if I'm the Twins. And trust me, I'm very anti-prospect hugging because I'm dealing with that with Marlins fans right now who don't want to trade anybody. But I don't know if you can get that deal done. That would be a tough one.
Yeah, I think with trades like that too, it's important to be open-minded, but also kind of try to consider what your perception of what the organization thinks of certain guys. And my perception, as you mentioned, I think you hit it on the head, is those top five, I think, are going to be really hard for them to move. They do have depth in the system. They used it. Bruce Zagradoral, was not expendable, but they saw him more as a bullpen piece, and they flip him for Kenta Maeda, and I could see a deal like that happening. But I agree, that's probably not enough. Here's another one for you, Aram, that we got. Hansel Robles, Dylan Bundy, two right-handed pitchers, I believe, from the Los Angeles Angels. In exchange for Blaine Enloe, who had a rough 2019 season in the minor leagues, Travis Blankenhorn, excuse me, kind of a utility guy, not big boy, but not projectable defensively and hasn't really excelled at the plate. And then another mid-tier minor leaguer. What do you think it would take to get Bundy and Robles back? Robles, I know, struggled in this shortened season. Bundy, though, was really great. What do you think about this one?
Bundy made some major strides on the bump in this last year and a half or so, and he looks like, you know, these changes are for real. I don't see a world where the Angels will really want to trade him unless they're going to get, again, a major return. I am going to say, though, Blankenhorn is a little bit more interesting to me than maybe others because of, you see what Jake Cronenworth just did with the Padres.
Right.
And I'm not saying he's going to be Jake Cronenworth, but he has that kind of aspect to him. He can play second base, he can play the outfield, he can play third. He can hit the ball, you know, pretty consistently. He can run into some baseballs. He shows some power. I think that he's a big league guy, super utility type of guy that you can try to package into a deal. But again, if you're the Angels, who have not won anything in so long, and it's criminal, they're holding Mike Trout hostage, and you don't have any pitching, I don't know if you can trade Dylan Bundy, again, unless you're getting one of those really solid guys. And maybe you're going to have to start a deal with, and I don't think you want to trade somebody you just drafted, but I think an Aaron Sabato, who I actually like, is going to have to be a starting point in a deal for somebody like that, just because it's going to be hard to get young or remotely young, controllable and uptrending pitching without parting with, you know, one of your more valuable guys. It's just going to be tough.
You see the Twins following a trend, Aram, drafting Aaron Sabato. They love those big college bats at the corners. They kind of figure it out later. We'll have some quick hitters here, and then I'll let you go. Most underrated Twins prospect, I think my pick is going to be Cole Sands, 23-year-old right-hander from, I think he went to Florida State. I talked about him this summer, but 6'3", 215, moved to Double-A in 2019, pitched really well. You mentioned the Florida State League is pitcher's haven, but the strikeout rate rocketed. Stuff's developing. I don't think people talk about him enough. He would be my pick. When you look at the Twins system, who do you think is the most underrated? Could be a top guy. You know, maybe you think is even better than the top 100 ranks him. Who's your pick?
Yeah, funny thing, actually, Cole Sands is born on the exact day as I was. So July 17, 1997. But he's interesting, and I definitely think he is – somebody that is not getting enough love. He's got a fastball changeup combo that seemed to work really well for him. I'm interested to see, you know, how it plays up at the higher levels, but the fact that they were able to be so aggressive with him and move him to Double A, like you said, in 2019, he's one of those guys that it's really unfortunate not having the season this past year, because that's a guy that I was ready to just watch and see what was going to go on with him. I'm going to say, and this is a guy that I am incredibly high on, is Gilberto Celestino, because Celestino is, to me, such a well-rounded player, and I'm very excited about what this guy, I think, is going to be able to put together at the plate and in the field. He's a center fielder that, in my opinion, he's given a 60-grade fielding, 60-grade field, pretty much across the board. And I still don't even think that's generous enough. I think he's got gold glove potential out there in center field. I've gotten to watch him quite a bit, and I love the routes he takes the balls. He's athletic. He has great body control to make some crazy acrobatic catches. He's got an above average arm out there in center field. And look, the Twins are pretty fine right now defensively in center field, assuming Byron Buxton stays healthy. But this is a guy that is a phenomenal defender as well. And he's putting it together at the plate too, which is something that was kind of lagging behind. We didn't know how the offensive profile was going to be, but overall he looked pretty good in 2019 in A-ball as a younger player. 276, hit 10 home runs. The strikeout rate was pretty low, swiped 14 bags. I think at center field in a premium defensive position, playing the defense that he plays with the hit tool that continues to improve because he's made some good adjustments at the plate, I like what I've seen from Celestino, and he's got my attention going into the next year. The other guy's Chris Vallemont, who I talked about already a little bit before. I mean, 127 innings, 150 strikeouts to just 41 walks. I was not thrilled that the Marlins parted with him. I was okay with it because the Marlins had so many pitching prospects, and it seemed like the Twins and the Marlins were exchanging something they had a lot of for something they didn't have as much of, and they were good partners. But Vallemont continues to see an uptick in his velocity. He's a driveline guy, which if you don't know what driveline is, it's a place out on the West Coast where they have all of the highest end technology. Trevor Bauer was one of the first guys to really push the driveline movement, and they get you going with just refining your mechanics, cameras from every angle, getting your spin rates up, and just getting the most out of your pitches. And a lot of guys have seen some major jumps in their velocity, and he's one of them. He's gotten up to 96 with the fastball. And a cool stat, there's only a couple 22-year-old pitchers to post a 30% K rate and a sub 7% walk rate in the Florida State League. It's Tarek Skubal, who made his major league debut this year, a consensus top 50 prospect. Dellin Betances, who was a starter and had an unreal year in the Florida State League before he ran into some problems, and then Chris Vallemont. So good company there. Wow. And he's somebody that's definitely worth watching. High floor, good pitchability, solid back of the rotation arm. I think that will climb pretty quickly.
Love both those picks. I think Celestino, you talked about Buxton. Buxton's got two more years of control, and also saying Royce Lewis could potentially be a center fielder, but I think people are overlooking Celestino as the center fielder of the future potentially for the Twins if he can continue to hit at a decent level. You know, we know the defense will be there, and he'll stay healthy too, hopefully. But last question for you, Aram, another mailbag. Which Twins prospects have the highest ceiling? I put down from the upper tier, obviously Royce Lewis because of the athleticism potential. You know, you mentioned the tools, potential five-tool guy. Yoandy Duran because of the fastball is gaining and the ground ball rate. Wander Javier, shortstop prospect who just hasn't put it together at all. And Twins leave him off, you know, let him go to the Rule 5 draft 2 years in a row, doesn't get picked last year. They don't add him to the 40-man again this year. And then Emmanuel Rodriguez, who's a teenager, Dominican, who also is an outfielder and I think has some projectability, high upside. But who would be your picks? Those are my four that I could just think of off the top of my head. Can be some crossover. What do you think?
Yeah, no, those are some good picks. And I think you hit the nail on the head there. I would almost say that I want to emphasize that both Kirilloff and Warnick have higher ceilings, I think, than some are making it out to be. And I think Kirilloff, I would say, has maybe as high of a ceiling as anybody in this system and anybody that is really this close to major league ready prospect-wise. We saw what he did in 18. He was hampered by a wrist injury in 19. There's a reason why he was called up. He was doing great things at the alternate training site. I think this guy could be a star. I really do. And I think that people have kind of he's a victim a little bit of prospect fatigue in the respect that he was so good in 2018 that even though his numbers were good in 19, it wasn't going to match what he did in 18. And people started to just kind of not write him off, but almost just take him for granted to an extent. I also think that Ryan Jeffers is a very good catcher in this game because there are not that many good catchers in the big leagues right now. There really just aren't. And you're seeing it reflected by how much money JT Realmuto is going to command and watch how much James McCann is going to get. And I don't think he's going to break any like records or get anything ridiculous, mm-hmm. but watch how many teams are going to be in on James McCann. I guarantee you it'll be 10 teams that'll be in on James McCann because there's so much just need for catching. Jeffers is a good hitter, which is already rare to have a good offensive profile for a catcher. He's a very good defender, has a good arm behind the dish, and I think he's got 25 home run power, especially in a Twins lineup that's absolutely loaded. I think Jeffers has the potential, unless some other catchers emerge, if you put him into the game right now and he has the year that I think he's capable of, he could make his way into the conversation of a top 6 or 7 catcher in the league just after one really good year. That's how good I think he can be. And I think Jeffers is another guy that's slept on a little bit.
They've seen that strategy I mentioned of drafting Sabato. They draft bat first a lot. And I think they thought that way with Rooker. They thought that way maybe with Warnick. They've thought that way with Jeffers. And they helped Jeffers become. And Ryan said, I didn't have a catching coach at UMC Wilmington. They helped him become a good defensive catcher. And then the bat's there. And so we've seen that. It's kind of fun to see that play out. where they can develop some defense in the minor league system, drafting bat first. And you mentioned now all of a sudden Jeffers is a top 6-7 prospect in the system, comes up and people want him starting on opening day. You know, it's just, it's funny to see that. And it's so fun to see that play out. Aram, thanks so much. We're going to have you on again soon. Such good work. Lockdown MLB prospects. Is that what you search up in Apple Podcasts?
Yes, absolutely. And I thank you for having me on. Bring me on anytime. I'd love to talk more Twins prospects and also the draft, because I do a lot of draft coverage as well coming up. You know, we can talk a little bit about what the Twins are going to be doing this coming draft and this past draft. One thing I want to plug real quick is another positionless guy that I saw a lot of Minnesota fans were not thrilled about was Alaric Solari, who, again, just follows that mold of guy that can hit but can't play position. Mm-hmm. I really like Solari's bat. I don't know where the hell he's going to play, but I do like his bat. I got to see him play a lot in the Cape. I would say I think you guys are going to warm up to that pick a little bit. So I wanted to plug that before I go. Keep an eye out for Alaric Solari. I really like his bat speed and his approach at the plate. But thank you for having me. And as you can tell, I could talk about so many Twins prospects, so we'll have to do it again.
Aram Layton 8, at Aram Layton 8 on Twitter. Locked on MLB prospects, locked on Marlins. Aram, thanks so much. We'll be in touch.